everything together for us beautifully. As you know, I was appointed as Legislative Council March the 6th of last year. And the last time that I was here, I gave you an overview of the office. So I'm not going to repeat the overview of the office and how we're structured. I'm going to go straight to talking about the challenges that we faced this past year and what we see in front of us, and then we'll talk about our policy packages. I do want to point out that this budget request and our policy packages do not address the retimed session, because we don't know exactly what the retimed session is going to look like at this point. So the assumption behind our budget request right now is that the pilot session will be analogous to a special session, and we won't be doing a formal publication of ORS after that pilot session. As you know, everyone in my office wears two hats. One hat is drafting and working towards the drafting and amendments for session. And then immediately after session, we put on the compilation and editing hat for the review and compilation and publication of the Oregon revised statutes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Good morning. Sorry I'm late. One of the things that occurs to me is that when you've said that it doesn't address the question of the retimed session, I'm trying to just see how long a vision agencies, not just you, but agencies are taking, because assuming that this experiment works, in all likelihood, we end up going there. We're running a $40-plus billion all-funds operation. I come to this place with some degree of sadness, but I think we're there. So my question is, have you looked at all of the operations going on inside Legislative Council and said, what of this stuff can we continue to do, assuming we go to annual sessions? I know that the ORS editing is a great point of pride with the office, and it's something everybody likes to do. But as the manager, looking ahead, can you guys continue to do that function if we go to annual sessions, or is that something that regrettably you think about turning out to professional folks somewhere out there that do that? The fact that you do it is a little unique. I think other states have different arrangements for publishing their ORSs. You guys have done it, and you've done it brilliantly for a long time. But have you had any internal discussion about whether or not that's something that you can keep asking your pretty overworked staff to do?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, that is, of course, something that we've talked about within the office. And because that is a legacy of our office and has been since Legislative Council began in 1953 and even before, it is critical to us that we continue to publish the ORS. And, in fact, publication of the ORS is important to the training of our attorneys and to improvement of the law that happens in the course of legislative session. Having the knowledge of the overall statutory scheme that you're working within. So to answer your question, we have done a lot of planning and internal discussion and have talked with the Public Commission on the Legislature and the Senate Committee on Rules and Operations about what our needs would be if we go to annual session. And Ms. McHugh actually has a package that we're not distributing that addresses our operations and what our requests would look like if we move from just having a pilot session to annual sessions. And we would not have to double our staff in order to address annual sessions. We would have to increase staff. There's no question about that.
Well, Mr. Church, I just want to make absolutely clear that I'm not making a brief for you guys stopping doing that. I think what I'm trying to do is to reflect the realities of how stressed your shop is right now, how much people are being asked to do in your office, and just looking at the full spectrum of the duties that you're discharging and trying to say, are you thinking about how when the tsunami of annual sessions washes over your office, what happens? And it seems that you are already thinking about it, and that's dandy, and without seeing the document, just knowing it exists suffices for my purposes. But I'm not making a brief that you divest yourself. I'm just figuring out how do you have the people power to be able to do it.
I appreciate that, Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson. That, of course, was one of the options that we looked at, but because that is such a critical function and a legacy function of our office, there are the other options are, I think, better for the legislature and as a body and for our office and just for the Oregon citizens that we serve in terms of the ORS.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson, the chair shares your concern here about what this annual sessions are going to do for us or to us, and more, I think, the latter than maybe the former as far as my concerns. But I don't think that, and I do appreciate that that's appropriate place to have asked the question with legislative counsel, but I think it's I think it affects every one of the support services
without question.
The legislature have. I think LFO has got a whole set of new conditions. I beg your pardon. A whole set of new conditions. Let's say revenue is going to have and on down the line, and I appreciate that this is the committee where that particular topic needs to be addressed, and I'm not sure that it's adequately addressed in the co-chair's budget, and I don't know exactly how we get there from here, but we're on that track now, and at least if we heard the Senate President correctly, he wants this thing cast in bronze as far as annual sessions are concerned. And, it's time, therefore, Senator, with your indulgence on the issue of planning, it's time for us to do a little planning about how we're going to run this ship if we're going to do it on an annual basis.
Mr. Chair, it might be helpful for the committee to know that there have been discussions with all of the offices and with leadership about what potentially could be the staffing or other needs of the legislative staff offices, as well as members in the assembly, given the annual session. However, given how many unknowns were out there about exactly how it's going to occur and what the process will be, the decision was made to not actually start increasing large staff numbers now based on anticipating what it might be, but to create a real review process that as it unfolds about what it's going to be, how many bills are going to be heard, the nature of those bills, that we will create a process to then review what are the needs and then perhaps in that session have a discussion of are there additional staffing needs that need to be addressed.
You probably will have to suffer through listening to us harangue about this for the remainder of this.
I like to think of it as spirited debate, Mr. Chair, not harangue.
You're much kinder, but, yet much more eloquent about how you phrase things than I am.
Chair, Mr. Hominger, I'm going to agree with you that harangue is a much better term. Johnson's here, it's harangue.
I just wanted to assure you, leadership had talked to us about how to at least get that on the table, but understanding it probably was premature to actually take large action right now.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee. The issue that you raise is, of course, in the front of our minds, and we certainly are planning for whatever alternatives are put in front of us. And but for this budget and this presentation, we're focusing on the February 8th session being more analogous, as I said, to a special session where we would not be publishing a complete edition of the ORS, but would do a supplement pamphlet as we do after special session.
You know what happens when 90 people who call themselves legislators arrive in this building? They develop an energy and that even they find impossible to shut off sometimes. So I would not look at. I'd be prepared to see something more happen in spite of the best intentions sometimes.
Well,
okay.
Chair Jensen, I'm not losing sight of that fact, and I can assure you that I will be back in front of this body or the e-board should that happen.
Okay.
And if it appears imminent. And we have certainly planned and talked about the possibility a lot. What I want to talk to you about today are the challenges that we have faced and how we have dealt with them over the past year and what our plan is over the next biennium. As you know, one of the major issues we've dealt with has been the loss of 7 attorneys, and the attorneys that have left have been for retirement, for family reasons, more money from the executive branch, and the workload issue during session. And what we want to do is ensure that we don't lose any more senior deputies to the extent that is possible. I'm going to talk about how we have integrated those attorneys into our office. And if my senior, if our new deputies are listening, I want to tell them not to take what I'm about to say personally. We have 7 new attorneys, and you don't replace Virginia Vanderbilt by hiring a brand new attorney, someone with 27 years experience who's been through multiple sessions and knows their statutory scheme in and out, knows the legislators with whom they're dealing, knows how to communicate with legislators to elicit the intent of what they want almost by reading their minds. And
it does make a lot sometimes.
but we have done incredible and intense training with respect to the new attorneys. The first thing we did was we had 3 weeks of intensive all-day training on our principles and drafting principles and how to use our systems. The second thing we did was assign to each attorney a senior deputy as their mentor. And for the period from July when they were hired through October 1 when the drafting load starts picking up, every single document draft that they did was reviewed by their mentor prior to going to the publishing division of the office. And I want to emphasize to you here how critical the publishing section of the office is to the functioning of the office and to the product that we do. We have 10 full-time senior copy editors and copy editors who review not only the work of our new attorneys, but also the work of the senior attorneys, and they review it twice before it is done and final during the drafting session. And they implement, they are as knowledgeable as the drafters on the form and style and the arcane, sometimes, rules of drafting that only the drafters in legislative council and our copy editors know how to implement. And I mentioned them here because in terms of effect on the office, as a group, our publishing staff have been affected in a really big way, and sometimes it's been very difficult for them because they have 7 new attorneys whose work they are reviewing on a daily basis while they continue to try to meet the deadlines. I think we hit home runs with respect to the people that we've hired. They're all talented and knowledgeable in their subject areas. But again, it takes 1 to 2 sessions at least before you are a really good drafter. And that is something that we are all living with, but we are doing the very best we can to integrate our new people in the office, and we hope to keep them. As you know, 2 of the 7 attorneys that we lost were shortly before and during session. And one thing that we've done is retain 2 contract attorneys in the tax area to assist us, so we would not, because that's a critical area not only for tax bills, but also for any bill that has a financial effect. So that has gone as seamlessly as we could possibly have hoped it would under all the circumstances. Our continuing plan is for all the new drafters in this editing cycle that is coming up, according to the senior drafters, that will be a very important learning opportunity, because they will get the big picture of the statutory scheme that they're drafting in, and essentially we'll have to read every word of every statute that is in the subject area within which they draft. And I also want to acknowledge the work of the mentoring attorneys, the 7 senior drafters who have been assigned these mentees, because, of course, that has affected their ability to do their own workload. But particularly the senior management in the office, Joan Robinson and Ted Ruttlinger, because Joan has just made herself available tirelessly to continue to mentor as we've gone along. And she represents everything that is good about the office, a passionate caring for our work and the quality, and she seeks and does imbue that into the new drafters by the way that she mentors. So I want to acknowledge her. That loss of 7 attorneys and replacing was one challenge that we faced. Another challenge is that, and maybe I shouldn't call them challenges, I should call them learning opportunities. We've had many learning opportunities.
Let's call them problems. Forget the euphemisms, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. As you know, we're lucky enough to have be getting a new bill drafting system that will go live in February 2008. It's scheduled to go live, and that date will be adjusted somewhat depending on the date that we actually start the pilot session. This year has been the year of writing the use cases and the requirements for that system. And that endeavor has taken the time of 2 of our drafters and 4 two copy editors and three copy editors and one production assistant. And I just can't say enough about how hard they worked writing up the requirements of each document that we produce and of all of our systems, so that when we get our new system, it does everything it's supposed to do for us. In November and December, the four primary members of the bill drafting team were locked in our library, and they didn't come out except for food and water. And that was basically 6 people who would otherwise have been working on drafts or helping drafts or copy editing. That and that, so that we had that challenge. But we're confident that that work will pay off in the system. It has now been documented, and it's in the it's in production, and on July of this year, we will receive the delivery of the beta system and have an opportunity to test it and ensure that it does meet our requirements. The third challenge has been the expedited session. And as you know, when I started last March, I went to the e-board and we received authority for 2 additional deputies, and that's because I was aware of the workload issues from the 2005 session and the fact that we had, the office had had to ask for a 1-week extension for bills for the House, drafts for the House. And I did not want to have to do that again. At the time, of course, we weren't aware there was going to be an expedited session this year, but I'm proud to say that we met our deadlines, and the February 26th deadline, and then in terms of amendments, we met the requests that were given to us for amendments as of April 30th, and our goal is to do the same for what is required for in the next month. Our office processed 800 amendment requests in the last 2 weeks. The total drafts that we have done to date is 4,105, and total amendments is 2,690. So that's the workload that we have had to deal with. One of
I don't think there's any members of the committee that are not aware of the trouble or problems that Legislative Council has had. I think there are certainly some members of the legislature that are displeased in a number of areas with their bill drafting and timing, you know, and that sort of thing with it. But I think all of us here are well aware of the difficulty. And quite frankly, I can't imagine stepping into a job and as complex as Legislative Council's job would be with this kind of a turnover in your staff and with yourself assuming a new position sort of thing. I mean, any business, any industry will tell you when you have new personnel it's going to cost you money because there is, no matter how skilled they are, there's a learning curve there that they, you know, I don't care that we're hiring attorneys, or I don't care, who it is. There's still a learning curve there, and you can accommodate a certain amount of turnover. You build that into your operation and plan for. But when your core staff is cut out from underneath of you via whatever reason, retirement or what have you, it has to be it has to have made it extremely difficult. And I think the committee recognizes that. I think we want to see a plan. I think we want to see action on your part to move beyond this. We understand the frustration that you've had. I believe we do. And we understand that we probably don't pay our legislative council members as much as at least one of the people I know that left took a very significant increase in salary. They tell me they're working twice as hard, but money is certainly a significant item in all of our lives. So how are we going to move from here, and how are we going to resolve this? Not because it's got to have been very difficult, and I do appreciate that, and I will damned well defend legislative counsel in this committee and on the floor of the House, or anywhere else for that matter, because of the difficulty of the chore that has been there. I just want to get beyond the difficulties and move this silly ship down the road.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, I share your desire to move beyond this, I will put my heart and mind and everything, the fiber of my being, into moving us through this and moving us beyond this, and I think the members of my staff feel the same way. We have all pulled together in a way that I wouldn't have believed possible. That expression, I wish I didn't know now what I didn't know then. There's no way that I could have anticipated in March the losses that we would have over this past year, but we've been amazingly resilient, and we have outstanding staff who are dedicated, as I said, to the legacy and to moving us beyond this. And I think the heart of it is the hearts and minds of the people who continue, who have years with legislative counsel, and in our new hires' desire to contribute to the legacy of legislative counsel and to serve the legislative assembly. We did have a half-day retreat with a facilitator in July to meet, identify the issues, and talk about the challenges that we had coming up. And that was very helpful in terms of morale building. But one of the issues that we realized is that many factors are outside of our control. And just to, as an example, the facilitator, one of her ideas for assisting the office was that we not do amendments during the period that we're drafting bills. And you know how well that would work. And so But it did draw attention to the fact that we rely on you, the individual legislators and the assembly as a body in terms of the number of requests and the information that you give us in terms of the quality and the timeliness of our product. There is so much within our control, and we do have a plan for improving the quality and timeliness of our work in terms of continuing to integrate these new people into the office. And another piece of it is, I think my role as legislative counsel is to meet individually with each legislator.
Mr. Chair, while we've taken this little break,
that was a mistake on my part.
We were hearing testimony from the Law Commission, and it occurs to me that the way that they are organized, there's a partnership with Willamette Law School, certainly. Frankly, I wish there was a better partnership with the other two law schools, a little richer, more robust partnership. But be that as it may, I'm just wondering whether or not, when the session ends and you guys can come up for air, whether there are any opportunities that can be forged with the law schools. The fact that bill drafting is a kind of narrow bandwidth in the practice of law, and assuming that we can figure out ways to make legislative counsel a highly desirable place to work, whether or not you can have any kind of internship programs to teach people the sort of arcane art of bill drafting, and whether or not there's any opportunity there to have students earn credit and to have you have some assists during the height of your drafting in certain areas of expertise. I'm thinking some of the really difficult areas, taxation, stuff like that. So that might be a possibility.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, I appreciate that, and I will follow up on that with you.
When you've got 2 seconds to breathe.
I will.
I don't know where you are in your presentation material.
I'm moving to the policy packages.
Okay, great. Well, why don't we go back and take off there?
Okay.
Senator Bates.
Before you go to your policy packages, I just want to say a couple things. One, I think that given the cards you were dealt, that LC's an absolutely magnificent job this session. You can't lose that many people. Put a mentoring program in, educate them as quickly as you have, and I can't think of any better outcome you could have had than what you've had done. Okay? I mean, just an incredible job, and I want to commend you for it. We got a review 2 days ago of where we are as far as bills drafted, bills out of committee, bills on the floor. We are ahead of the last session substantially. We probably had more amendments than normal because, again, of inexperience.
Mm-hmm.
And we recognize that, and that's a part of efficiency which you've lost by losing all those bill drafters. But for the most part, you're doing a magnificent job, and I want to thank you for it.
Well,
I want to thank you publicly for it. That's the first thing. Second thing is, I'm going to go back to what we talked about yesterday, lack of vision, not your vision, our vision. I believe the Legislative Assembly has a significant lack of vision of where this state's going in the next 50 years, next 10 years, even the next 5 years. We have a little peek of that of talking about having annual sessions. We've got 3.5, 3.6, 3.7 million people in the state. They're talking about us going up a million more people in the next 5 to 10 years. I have a hard time believing that, but it may be real. If we actually have a 20 or 25% increase in our population, this job is going to become more complex for you and for us. What this building looks like, who's in this building, how many people we have in LC and LFO has to dramatically change, or we will not get the job done. And we'll be coming back here in special sessions in July and August to fix things that we made mistakes on. As an example, I'm very concerned about ballot measure 37 fix we've got going on right now. I have no idea if that's a good bill, well drafted, with everything looked at in it. And I voted it out of committee. And, you know, that kind of stuff going on can get us all in a lot of trouble, in the state in a lot of trouble, if we're not really, really careful. And what I'm asking for as we go into your policy package is I hope they're robust enough to start answering some of those questions. You know, what I've found from a management point of view, and I've run organizations as big as 300 positions and 1,000 employees, I find it's pretty simple sometimes. You don't pay people well and you abuse them, they have a tendency to quit and leave. And they have all kinds of reasons for doing that. But the bottom line is, you take someone away from their family for 6 months and work them 7 days a week, 12 to 14 hours a day, and then expect them to come back with a smile on their face the next session and pay them less they can get in private industry or less they can get somewhere else in government, you know, they leave. What a surprise. Okay? That's going to continue if we don't fix this. You may have bridged the gap this session, but I will guarantee you if we continue the way we're dealing with LC and other parts of the legislative staff, we will lose them too. So I'm looking forward to what your packages are.
Well,
and I'm hoping that they're robust.
I'm going to
thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, one thing I would say as Anne goes through her policy packages, there's almost this session kind of a double set. You're having the initial set of packages here. Some additional work has been done relative to some of those other recommendations, but it's still very preliminary, and they aren't officially in front of this committee. How those ultimately get woven in is still a question, but they are being prepared, that work, to look at that kind of a broader set of packages, not just for LC, but for the entire branch, frankly, is still kind of under consideration.
With the idea that those are going to come forward in February?
Madam Chair, it's a question mark whether some of them would actually even still come forward sooner than that, whether some of those then would be heard during committee hearings pre-February and kind of be worked out in more detail, and some of them coming in February, and some perhaps next biennium if it's designed, and if that ends up being the issue. But that work is being done in addition. So what Anne's going to present here is not kind of what I would say is her full set packages, but those are being still worked on to kind of to the broader vision that you're talking about.
Madam Chair and Teresa, that still Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. Teresa, that still gives me great pause. So we lose 7 or 8 more drafters next time around? This potential happening, unless there's something as policy package says we got a ball and chain in them and they're anchored to their desk for the next year and a half, which I don't think we can. We do that?
I don't.
Okay, but assuming we can't.
Your lawyer will tell you can't.
We probably can't do that. Some of the stuff's pretty immediate.
Well, that's a good tee up probably for the discussion of the policy packages, because these are, in contrast to Senator Bates' call for vision, these are pretty pedestrian and pretty mechanical and pretty modest.
Yes,
so
they
are. Why don't you just zip through them?
The
first policy package is reclass of 4 positions that are now classified as deputy, but we're paying 4 individuals in these positions at senior deputy level because they meet the qualifications. We simply need to have the money in the budget to officially reclassify these 4 positions. The e-board requested that we do it administratively and get approval in our budget this session. So essentially that's reclassing of 4 positions. The second package is to follow the recommendation of IES and replace 35 of our PCs to stay within the IT guidelines. The third package.
Let's go back to 101, the information technology package.
this just replaces 35 species.
Correct.
Against the backdrop of this replacement, you are now putting in place and beginning to test drive the new bill draft system that this committee approved, the General Government Subcommittee approved last session.
That's correct.
Tell me where the integration point is. You're adding PCs. Are they the right PCs? Do they have the right functionality? Do they have the right program capabilities? I'm just trying to get the connect between the work that's happening on the bill drafting system, and I'd be quite curious to know how that's going, because that was a major undertaking, and it was the first time that Legislative Council had gotten a big infusion of money to do a big project. They needed to, colleagues, because for those of you that weren't here last session or not on this committee, the old bill drafting system was essentially failing. And it had been cobbled together, and so we made a $2 million investment in putting in a new bill drafting system, and I'm just curious how it's going.
I think I may have spoken to that a bit when you were out of the room.
Oh, then don't repeat it.
As one of our challenges, it is on time, on task, in terms of the work they're doing, and it was one of our problems this session was having six employees, six staff dedicated to writing the business use cases and writing the requirements for what will be delivered to us in beta form in July of 2007.
So you have nothing on the ground right now. You're still using the old system, and there's none of the new pieces of, because I misunderstood that early on. And when you said they're writing the business case, one would think you'd have to have the business case in place before you could buy anything or create any software.
There was a part of that that was written, but this is the most detailed part of it, down to the codes of each document and the other technical parts of it.
Okay.
And it's been done in partnership with Propylon, the vendor, and with IS. And the bill drafting system is actually part of the assembly's budget. It's not in our budget, but I am a sponsor of the project and meet weekly and get updates of where it is. We recently had a release as part of the contract deliverable of the basic product with 20% customization. So we're able to see what it's going to look like and what our bills are going to look like and get a preview of how it works. But it's the 2007 July release that we're most looking forward to, because they should have it fully customized, and we'll be able to test it and make sure that it does absolutely everything we need it to do. And that's one of our big tasks in this coming year.
And have you been in discussion with them about how that will integrate in with the requirements of a 2008 session?
Yes. In fact, we included that in the contract.
Okay. So then package 101 really is just simply mechanical devices that you're replacing on a prescribed rotation. Yeah, desktops.
Prescribed rotation.
Okay. Okay, 102.
102 was the law commission package, and they spoke fully to that. The fourth package.
But let's be clear here, colleagues. This is the law commission's $150,000 to do their work.
And
this just passes through your budget, and there is no residual benefit to LC. You're not doing things faster, cheaper, smarter, better, because the law commission is getting $150,000.
No, we are not. And, in fact, in terms of the challenges, this last interim, I calculated approximately 2.5 FTE was dedicated from my office to working on law commission packages, because we do all of their drafting. So Ted Ruttlinger did all of their ethics packages. There was a major bond package that Harrison worked on, and a judgment debtor package that Hendricks worked on, and some juvenile rights packages that I believe Lori Freeman has worked on. So not full time, but I think of a total of 2.5 FTE over this interim.
Have you had conversations with the Law Commission about how that works? Because are you saying you don't charge for that? You just provide that gratis out of your office to the Law Commission?
It is understood that we have a shared vision of improvement of the laws, and because we are the drafting experts, we provide that work. And if it wasn't done for the Law Commission, there are legislators who are on the Law Commission. It would be done for an individual legislator. So it's really, you know, the mode in which it's being done. I'm not saying that that workload would not be there otherwise.
Senator Bates.
My sense is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the Law Commission has sort of ramped up in the last few years to take these, to use a phrase she often uses, an arcane set of laws and try to clean them up to a great degree and make them more relevant to our time. So you have probably an extra load there, too, but hopefully it's coming in throughout the biennium, not just through sessions, so it's hopefully something you can handle it better. I mean, my sense is it's sort of a steady product coming out.
That's
over
correct.
A few years, not getting hammered during session with it, but what the results of that have to be brought out during session, so the bills are drafted, but may need amendments, so your workload is increased not only during interim, but also somewhat, probably with amendments, during the session. But the work you're doing there is also maybe a little bit finite in that you may be doing some catch-up work from what hasn't been done for the last 30 or 40 years.
Senator Bates, members of the committee, that's correct. I will say that we need to cut back on that time in some measure. And one of the things that I think needs to be cut back is the attendance at the meetings, because the meetings take a lot of time away from the office, and it's important for the drafter to be there at some of the meetings, but I think it has been an intense workload and a problem over this last summer.
I don't know how, having sat through an interim's worth of Law Commission meetings on the issue of ethics, every meeting faithfully attended by Mr. Ruttlinger, I don't know how he could have missed those meetings and been able to draft. I mean, I would take issue, it's your shop, and I don't want to insinuate myself into the management of it, but I know the level of conversation that went on around the table with Mr. Ruttlinger's full participation to help guide us back to the legal trail where we strayed off occasionally. I don't know how he could have had somebody come in and say, here are the minutes, draft. I think that would have been like spinning straw into gold. And I just know the intense time. I don't think we have to dwell on this, but I certainly think it's an issue. And, colleagues, when you look at these very modest little packages, the total of your packages is, God, I wish I could find my glasses. The total of your packages is $280,000.
I have one more that I haven't talked about yet.
A new one.
I have a new one for the people who I talked to you about as being overburdened by having seven new attorneys or copy editors. When I went to the e-board last March, I told them that it might affect the office having even two new positions before knowing we were going to have new attorneys. And the e-boards, I warned them that I may need a complimentary copy editor in order to give the office the full complement of what it needed. And this is a very important package. It's for one senior copy editor and one copy editor position, full-time. and this would allow us to process drafts more quickly and more accurately. They have really suffered over this last session, this session that we're in right now, because the burden of the new staff in our office has really fallen on their shoulders in terms of editing the new drafter's work.
So this is the $234,366 general fund for
That's
the
correct.
Two editorial positions. But it still makes my point is slightly diluted way. You're asking for, and these are rough numbers, $500,000, and a third of it goes to the Law Commission.
That's correct. I have worked with Teresa. What I don't want you to go away with is an impression that I don't want my senior drafters to have more money, because I think I told you before, and I have statistics that demonstrate that the senior drafters are paid 17% less than DOJ senior attorneys. And
Madam Chair, members of the committee, some work has been done with both legislative counsel, but with the other offices, looking at salaries and doing a survey of salaries compared to local government and the executive branch. And before you are done with work session, I expect you are going to see something relative to salaries for all the offices, including this one. So you will. I would just caution you that it's not a matter of it being completely left out. It's being done in a more branch-wide basis, but it will still be discussed.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just to pile on here, I would hope so. It seems to me that during the interim, you can get a opinion from legislative counsel very quickly. During the session, it's almost impossible to get an opinion, and I understand why. Back to Senator Bates' comment about the land use planning bill. And that's something that should be someone should be looking at on a 24-hour basis to make sure that everything is appropriate there. Appropriate whether you like it or not, whether it's legal. I think that in the bill drafting amendment part of it, you give them a tsunami. And where I understand the constraints, and we have a session every 2 years, you can't perhaps hire enough people for the whole period of time to make up for the short time that they need to do all that work. But I mean, I couldn't agree more that we need to take care of our own shop first here.
Well,
I think the legislation, I think it was yesterday, I'll say it again today, it seems to me the legislative branch government is becoming weaker each year,
right.
Almost every month.
That's right.
And I think that unless we act to fix that, it isn't going to change. Nobody else is going to advocate for us.
The one other thing I would add to this is that there probably is a larger leadership conversation here in terms of workflow. We bear some of the responsibility for this. I mean, some of our colleagues take great pride in the fact that they have asked for 185 bill drafts. I think some of us bring forward constituent legislation that we know has very little chance of survival in the building, and that each one of these bills costs upwards of $1,000 to draft. So somewhere along the line, I think that, piling on to my two colleagues, we have some culpability for workload management in your office. Conversely, you being armed with the right tools to make the case, I don't know whether or not you have visited with HR to say we'd like a little mini salary survey inside these professional categories. I wonder about other highly skilled professionals that are in service to state government, engineers, lawyers, folks where the private sector's salaries don't approach comparable, nor will they because there are benefit packages to weigh off and all the rest of that. But I don't know when the last time that legislative council requested and received a really comprehensive private sector comparison as well as comparisons to sister agencies.
Senator Johnson, actually, I have in my materials the portion of the salary survey that was done with comparable public agencies this past year by Human Resources and Legislative Administration, and that document showed that our deputies were under market by 15% and the seniors by 10%. So, and that is part of the material that Teresa has. I've provided the material and the requests with respect to additional staff and salary. And that is going to be brought out at the appropriate time.
And that's part of what you look at that as a grant with all of the offices at one time.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beach.
I would offer that, nothing personal here, that this is the appropriate time. This is the committee supposed to be looking at this. And I like to have information as quickly as it becomes available. And I like to see what's available right now. It isn't set in stone. Why is this not here in front of the committee today so we can see it and look at it and make decisions about it, put input into it? If this committee is do nothing more than rubber stamp whatever comes down from some higher authority, I'm not interested in being here every morning at 8:30. And so we need information now to look at it, discuss it, and work as a committee, if you believe in committee structure, and send it back to leadership for further discussion. And this has nothing to do with you, okay?
Okay.
From that point of view. So I need that information now. And I think holding it back is something that's unacceptable to me. I just want to lay it right out there and tell you that. Secondly, are we in a position we can ask Ann a few more questions, Mr. Chair, or are we interrupting her flow too much here?
We can ask her more questions because I'm going to when y'all get through.
Okay. So I'd ask staff to give us more information. Okay. And if you're not, if that information is denied to us, I'd like to know who denied it to you so I can have a discussion with that individual.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, we can get you some additional information. It's really not in the sense of being denied. We're trying to put it together as a package for the branch so that you actually have it in a form that's useful and that the committee can look at on a branch-wide basis, but with the individual information. And certainly staff is always going to be available to come back and have that conversation.
It may well be that LFO suffers the same problems that LC does with lack of staff and lack of ability to get work done because we've underfunded you also, which I think is quite likely the case. Mr. Chair, could I ask?
I just want to correct one point, if I may, that we're not holding back. And I didn't mean to imply there's anything being held back.
Mr. Chair, I'm not talking about you.
All right.
Okay? No, I don't think you're holding anything back, and I appreciate that.
Okay.
During the time that we're in session, and my sense is that your drafters are working roughly 7 days a week and late in the night, how do you compensate that time for them? Do they have earn time off to get ETO for this and take off time during the interim?
Yes, they
do. Do they get paid overtime?
They're exempt employees, so they don't. Senator Bates, members of the committee, they do not get paid overtime. They're exempt. But we do have some leeway in providing administrative leave for excellent performance, and we do give compensatory time off for time worked.
Mr. Chair, could you be a little more explicit about that, please? They go down to 3 days a week for 6 months afterwards and get to know their families again, or is it what do they actually get from this?
1 to 2, time and a half, whatever.
They don't earn time and a half, but hour for hour.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
I would
suggest that in my business, when people work these kinds of hours, by state law, we're required to either pay them or give them substantial time off. It's usually an hour and a half for every hour worked. And we make sure they get that time. And if we don't, my nurses quit and my doctors quit. And I want these people treated fairly for the hard work they do. The least we can do is give them some time off at all possible. Is there any possibility of doing that?
We do, and we do provide time off for the hours that are worked overtime. We do everything we can under the law.
Well, Mr. Chair, you need to change the law for this?
It would be... That's a possibility.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
I have a couple of priority bills left. You guys do the drafting.
I think...
Did I send that with some other stuff that you sent to the LFO right now?
I think that what we would need to do is have a draft that made it clear that the FLSA did not apply to the legislature.
I'm asking you...
To draft that?
Yeah.
All right.
That comes from me, not from you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Well, I applaud and support the philosophy that I think drives my colleague. I am a little concerned that the legislature insinuates itself into piecemeal salary adjustments. I think this is part of this systemic long look at how do we compensate professional staff in this building, whether it's Dr. Warner sitting behind you, his shop, or LFO. And it concerns me a little bit that we're taking a piecemeal approach. I fully support the idea that folks get compensated well, but I just want to be mindful of the fact that there are professional staff in this building who work intensely hard for 6 months, whether it's in Dr. Warner's shop or in Mr. Rocco's shop, and I want to make sure we're viewing this systemically.
Mr. Chair.
There are some professional staff, Senator, that work hard in my office that don't get compensated.
Mr. Chair, I would not think of financial compensation. I'm thinking of time off, and I would be, I'm thinking not just of LC. I'm obviously thinking of all the groups that work so hard for us. If they cannot take adequate time off in the interim, when that time should be available to them, I think it's something we should discuss and look at. And since they can't ask us, I'm asking them.
I'm going to take the liberty of the chair and cease the debate on this. I have heard that LFO is going to be providing a priority bill draft for Senator Bates on this issue, in which case I will ask the co-chairs that that bill come to this committee. And we can continue that debate if they would be so kind as to send it to us.
I'd like to have that time. Discussion with the co-chairs myself before we draft.
Yeah.
Okay. Heard and understood.
If you have more that you're, or have you completed?
No, I just want to thank you very much for your patience and.
Okay. Good.
Just one quick thing on the Appendix 4. We have under number 28, 53 requests. Unless someone submitted some 40 in my name, that's incorrect. I would suggest
I'm sorry.
The 29 is probably 14, and 14 is probably the correct one.
Can you...
I think the misunderstanding is that
district.
It's not by district. I think these are just numbered 1 through 60 and 1 through 30, that it's not Senate District 44.
The purpose was that the purpose was so this would be anonymous. It was... it's anonymous. It's not... You're not meant to be able to figure out who did what.
You might want to disclaim that. I think this is very misleading, and not intentionally, but I know that I turned to it and I went, what? As soon as I saw it. So,
all I saw was this one person at 131. I don't know who that is.
The good news for me is the way they did this, 9 requested, 9 introduced, 100%. I like that, but it was wrong. So,
9 for 9 there.
So, yes, that's a very good point. Well taken.
Mr. Chair,
I had a quick question on that, too, because obviously I misunderstood it. But does this track all the, it tracks all the drafts, because I know that I've had a number of drafts that I asked for, but I didn't particularly introduce them. Some other members would introduce some. Some were committee bills. So are all the drafts accounted for in this?
This is a snapshot taken on March 14th, 2007, and it was done for the operations committee. So this is tracks drafts under individual representatives' names without disclosing who they are, and of those drafts, it would track what had been introduced. I don't think it would, if it had been introduced by a committee, I don't think it would show that on this document.
Mr. Chair,
I
go back to the comment that I had made earlier about discipline within all four of the caucuses, because in the absence of information early in the session about what direction the co-chair's budget is taking, I know that a number of people requested bill drafts that I would characterize as prophylactic. You know, if the co-chair's head this way, we want to be lined up with a bill to head this way. And you end up with a lot of bills that you guys put a huge amount of energy into that go nowhere. Limiting bills was a discussion that came up one time. I think that the minority party might not take very kindly to that suggestion. It certainly is a subject area that I think is ripe for discussion, just in terms of workload management and the fact that we're the portal of entry for all of these bills. And some of them one pagers, others like the health care bills, and I'm not picking on Dr. Bates, but I don't know how many trees you guys murdered in going through that one. Some of them enormously
down 10%.
Complex. But I think this is a snapshot. This Exhibit 4 is not clear, and I would suggest respectfully that you correct it to indicate it's a snapshot and that the legislators are just numbered 1 through 60 and 1 through 30, not to ascribe district numbers with them.
Well, of course, I look really good, then I want to.
That goes without saying.
Yes, we will do that. It hasn't been distributed widely, but I will put that disclaimer to each person who's received it.
I want to ask a couple of questions here, and my apologies for being out of the room. I'll listen to the tapes later, but in the event that the topic hasn't appeared, the topic of amendments and the fact that amendments do not appear in committee until the bill, until we're in work session in some cases. And I sat on a committee with Representative Beyer where I think we had 11 or 12 new amendments to a bill that some of us had never seen. Perhaps the chair was aware of all of them, though I think maybe she wasn't aware of the exact wording of the amendments on those. And I find that to be absolutely an impossible situation. And I think the vehicle is there at no real extra cost in the world we're living in right now. And it's called computers. And I think you can have us have committees, at least, all programmed in to deliver those those amendment drafts to the members of the committees, you know, like that, with zero extra work other than the initial process of setting up the email addresses for committee members type of thing. And I don't know whether this issue was discussed, but if it isn't, it's one that I think you're going to be hearing a lot from members on this, and I think Representative Beyer wants to add a comment or correct the chair if he's in error on this.
Well, I would never try to correct the chair.
Mr. Chair. that particular committee, and I think this is a symptom of the building too, is that that one member had numerous amendments to the bill, and another member had numerous amendments to the bill, and they weren't sharing necessarily with each other, which is what probably led to a lot of the confusion, which I'm sure that there were at least two of those amendments that were almost identical.
Right.
And so...
Well, of course, we work under confidentiality, and we couldn't share it unless we were given authority to do so, unless it's a committee amendment.
If those amendments are going out...
Pardon me?
If those amendments are going out to the committee, the confidentiality is, you know...
But we do rely on... we did 800 sets of amendments just in the last 2 weeks.
And you'll get more.
And we will get more. And when we deliver, we deliver to the requestor, and then it's the requestor's responsibility to give the copies to, if it's the committee administrator gives the copies to the members of the committee. And it's really an issue of version control and ensuring that we don't issue amendments improperly, because we may do 16 sets of amendments to one bill, and some of them may be for individual members, some of them are for the requested by the committee chair. So that's how we track them, is by delivering to the person who has asked.
You track them in a way, but when we track them when they show up on the thing, on the desk, at in a hearing with 500 people, excuse me, and in some cases that may not be all that big of an exaggeration. There have been a couple of committees around here this time where they're may have been in excess of 500 people watching what's going on, you know, and we look like bloody idiots. Excuse me, we're trying to read amendments that are 3 pages long to a bill that is 40 pages long, that there's, you know, 104 different spots in that bill where those amendments are being inserted. And you know, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I don't work that fast. I can do a one-word amendment pretty easily, but and if there's something we need to do again, as far as policy or procedure or law, let us know. But we
will definitely talk about this further.
Okay,
I'll come and see you, and we'll figure out what the problem is together and see if we can come up with a solution.
It has always been a problem since I got here, so I you know, I don't, I'm not blaming this particular Legislative Council on that. The only thing I am concerned about with this Legislative Council is we have the ability now to make those amendments available so that I, as a legislator, can be prepared when I go to committee meeting. If I'm not prepared, then that's my own fault, and then I deserve to look foolish. But the ability is there to send them out, and I do appreciate, you know, the issue of confidentiality, but it seems to me that when we're expressing a desire for an amendment to a bill that's already a public record,
right?
You know, I got to scratch my head on that. So
I will study that and get back to you on that, sir.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And we do have Mr. Warner here to begin a discussion on the Legislative Revenue Office. And I know that He has none of the problems, and it'll be a very quick discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office, and I think this will be quick, but it'll be up to you to decide. The budget that LFO has been working on is really just an extension of our current service level. We have myself and four other economists and a full-time office manager, and we've stayed at that level, 6 FTE, since we were created in 1975. The only change that we have made over the years has been our committee's our session staff. We have three clerical staff in the session. Those now come out of the assembly budget, not out of our budget, and that was a change that we made along with LFO in 95, I believe, really for unemployment compensation and some other reasons. But so our staff has been set at six, and I think you're pretty familiar with what we do. We've organized ourselves really by areas of expertise in property tax, in school finance, and in income tax. And then we have another category that the only area where we really see a lot of growth is kind of the excise tax area. It's we've traditionally assigned a lot of things in this area, bond finance, lottery, kind of miscellaneous kind of revenue items, and we're seeing an increase in that kind of activity. One of the issues that we've talked with you about and talked with the Interim Commission about is the impact of the retimed sessions. Our expectation right now is that it will not impact our overall staff size. We'll be able to essentially do the kinds of things that we do now. Of course, like everybody else, I think we're guarded in that expectation because of the experimental nature and see how that affects our workload. We do think that the idea of going to a more structured kind of interim would be very helpful to us to give us more kind of continuity in our session work. Oftentimes we work on a lot of things in the interim and it kind of gets put aside and we don't see it again in the session. So some greater continuity I think would be helpful for us to kind of direct our efforts.
Senator Johnson?
I want to follow up on that because I'm interested in your opinion about how that would work. I think for some of us who haven't been at the epicenter of the decision making, there's been a lot of speculation about how we're going to conduct what will essentially be an interim between June 29th and when we come back in whatever date that is, whether or not the committee structure will stay the same, whether or not we'll break into interim committees that are either focused on subject areas or particular issues. Do you have an opinion or any guidance or any thinking about that?
Madam Co-Chair, I think it would be helpful to have to have more continuity, to have committee members that would be in the regular session that would continue on in the interim. I know that's been discussed. To have some agreement among those committee members of what those key issues are, so that there would be some continuity going into the session. And, you know, if you're looking at trying to do something, make some major decisions in that short session in February, we really obviously have to do all of that work beforehand so that is really outlined and structured going into that session. So I could see that taking that time period, particularly leading up to the February session, is a lot more targeted and focused on a couple of specific, if it's in the revenue area, a couple of specific revenue measures that the committee would be able to take up at that time.
Follow, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to hear you say that because as my service here has evolved, I realize that developing expertise in issue areas is enormously valuable to the process, and particularly, I would assume, in revenue, which is a sort of interesting world all unto itself. But having some continuity through the interim, leading into interim work, developing bills, developing law, and having a little more regularity to it might help with the workflow across all the legislative agencies.
I would agree. You know, the biggest problem we have is when we're trying to look at some ideas for new revenue sources, new tax bases, for example, and we're trying to do the kind of initial work during the session. I mean, in many cases, we just can't do quality work on that. We have to do it beforehand because there's a lot of data gathering, model construction, and things that require some time and effort to do. And this session, let's face it, this session atmosphere is not conducive to that kind of analysis and work. So we try to anticipate, and that's something we've always emphasized, and I try to work with the committee chairs and try to think of what those things are, but I think a little bit more structure would be helpful and end up with some better products when the session comes around.
Thank you.
So the only other thing that I would add, again, we're looking at essentially a continuation of our current service level. We have been in discussions with Legislative Fiscal Office about some more tailored technical support. We do have a number of technical issues, both hardware and software, particularly software issues. For example, we have the Oregon Tax Incidence Model, which is a model of the state economy and shows the economic effects of major tax proposals and the distribution effects. That requires specific kind of software called GAMS that we use. We are an intense user of a SAS, for example, which I don't think anybody else really uses to any great extent in the building. The SAS program we use for our tax calculator for the personal income tax, so when you make a proposed change in the personal income tax, we can give you the results on how it affects different income groups and what the revenue impact will be, and we have a sample of 50,000 taxpayers that we base that on. We would like to do more and work with the Department of Revenue on trying to get a better sample for corporate taxpayers, because that's where we're really getting a lot of questions. You've had a lot of discussion around the corporate minimum, for example. We don't have the kind of sample, and admittedly, corporate is a lot more skewed because you have a relatively small number of payers that are paying a lot. But we would like to have a better way of trying to calculate some of those effects more quickly, and that would be something we would like to work on. But all of those require software, and if we had some technical support that was really tailored to what we do, we think that could make some of that effort more productive.
Senator Johnson.
Dr. Warner just answered my question. I didn't know what you needed, whether it was bodies and time or whether it was software and money, and you just answered it.
Yes, and we have been in consultation with Legislative Fiscal, and I think we share kind of similar thoughts about that. And I would not anticipate us, needing someone on a full-time basis, but on a shared basis with Legislative Fiscal. So that's kind of concludes my remarks on.
Do you have any pops in here?
I don't, Mr. Chair. We have some software in our budget and included for we have some capital spending available to replace our computers. That's essentially what we've done, and that's a continuation of that service level.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul mentioned the discussion of some technical resources. We actually do have somebody right now doing the interviewing and doing the background work on that. We could anticipate a package yet, just because Ann had a new package coming before you talking about that. But the details aren't completed yet. And just as with the other committees, Legislative Revenue was also involved in the salary survey. Before we're done, we will have that discussion of some salary issues relative to the office. Dr. Warner, do you think that your space needs have been adequately anticipated in terms of if the wings renovations went ahead, where you and your staff would go during a construction, and whether or not adequate anticipation has been offered for your additional staffing or conference room or just those sorts of needs?
Senator, it's not clear to me what the space plan would be if the wings are vacated. I understand it would be for an extended period, and I don't know what we've talked a bit about options, but I don't know what those decisions have been. Of course, you know, our preference would be to minimize the disruptions as much as possible, but I recognize that that's not possible. Obviously, we have to leave the building. If we have to be somewhere in the immediate vicinity, that's probably not too big of a problem for us. Our space right now is we're at capacity in terms of office space. If we were to add another person, for example, we don't have space for that. We do have we requested and legislative assembly has been very helpful in giving us some additional session staff this time. We've got very backlogged on our revenue impact statements and analysis, and we've had a person come in 3 days a week, and she's really helped us kind of clear that for us. But she's right now in our conference room, so that's we don't have any additional space.
One last question: is the software and the modeling that you use off the shelf? Is it created for this? I mean, obviously there are some unique elements that reflect our tax structure, but is it licensed? Is it proprietary? What's its shelf life? How long? When does it have to be refreshed?
We have a license with a SAS, which is generally used in social science, used across the country. Most universities have it. So that's been around for a long time, and there is a license update that I believe is every 2 years, and it's something around $1,500, and we've incorporated that into our budget. The other software that we have used that's licensed is called GAMS, and it's the one that we use for our general equilibrium model, and it's pretty sophisticated, and we do have a licensing requirement on that as well. So those are the two main that we've purchased regularly. We don't see any new ones out there. But those are ongoing licensing renewals that we have to acquire in order to maintain the software. We also have some data requirements, particularly for our economic model. We purchase the data and input that on about every 3 year basis. So that's another purchase we have to make.
Mr. Chair, I would just conclude with an observation. Sitting in the two subs that I sit in, we've watched this parade of agencies come through in some cases with jaw-dropping packages. I can think of one agency that came in with $174 million worth of packages, and I've listened to the professional staff that keep the legislature going in terms of revenue and fiscal analysis, our lawyers. Dr. Warner comes in with nothing. We haven't heard from Mr. Rocco yet. The legislative council comes in with this modest little package, and a third of that is for somebody else. And just seeing it in comparison with agency requests, I couldn't let the opportunity pass without acknowledging the cadre of professionals that help us do our job and their little modest asks. And I just wanted to state that.
I think having not heard from Mr. Rockery, I think his coup in the in stealing Teresa.
That's all he gets for the remainder of time.
Probably all he gets for the time being.
No packages.
So what?
We've made a couple of successful raids on the executive branch, too.
he says with a bright smile.
Yes. Including right there.
Okay. If nothing else for the agenda, we're going to do...
The schedule is then Tuesday we are returning, and we will have a further discussion of the wings and the implementation process and with that package. And I would assume then we will carry forward legislative fiscal to Tuesday as well. So we're technically scheduled for Monday, but at this point it looks like we could conclude our work on Tuesday if that's the chair's preference. So.
You mean if the chair gave people a day off? Would that be a good precedent?
I would have your picture in my office, sir, with three perfect tangerines, some incense going.
Okay.
I have an 8 o'clock appointment.
Mr. Chair,
are you going to object?
Well, no, I'm not going to object.
Oh,
but if I recall correctly, and maybe I don't, but yesterday when we were talking, I thought we were talking about going ahead and coming in on Monday to have some further discussions about packages from a standpoint of our legislative professional offices and our staff and our own personal staffs as well. And
I think that's on the agenda for Tuesday.
But all that can be accomplished on Tuesday. I'm very happy to take Monday off, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, we can work out the details of which packages you would like to have more discussion about. Legislative administration will be here that day, but certainly we can also talk about some of the assembly pieces if you would like as well.
Everybody can use a little break now and then. And
no complaint here, Mr. Chair.
The chair went home. He wouldn't have to get back quite so early that day.
Okay.
No Monday.
What?
No Monday.
No Monday.
Good.
Okay.
Okay.